Welcome back, travelers, to your Referral Roadmap. This podcast is dedicated to helping you unleash your personal and business revenue potential by cultivating referral partnerships. In this 10-part series, we're diving into the dynamic realm of target markets. We'll be exploring how understanding and effectively tapping into target markets can be a key driver of success, offering insights and strategies on how to master this essential aspect of your business. Today, we're talking about pivoting your target market, the worthwhile fear, with our special guest, Emily Strickler. Emily is a co-owner and designer of Toast Design Studio, as well as a digital design teacher at the University of Oklahoma. So welcome, Emily. I know you have tons of wisdom and knowledge to share with us today, but before we jump into that interview portion, wanted to see, Athena, do you have a story to share with us today?
So I am going to go off script, listeners. I know you guys can't believe it that I would not have a story, but I am so excited to talk to Emily. So I'm going to not do a story today. And okay. Today, what I want us to do is go straight into the facts so we have more time with Emily because, hey, you guys are going to want to save this recording. Please like, subscribe, save this one. You'll want pen and paper. She is going to inspire you. And on this topic, she's doing real life, really making it happen. And so I can't wait for you guys to hear from her. So I will be quiet. Jada, you know, we've got people that want some facts and figures. Stories are great, but let's get the data straight. So why don't you give us that?
Okay, well, I'll keep it short and sweet today. We do have a LinkedIn study that I'll make sure is in the show notes as well. But the LinkedIn study essentially says that by targeting everyone, we expect to open the floodgates of opportunity. We picture lines forming outside stores and our phones ringing nonstop. If we narrow our audience, though, foot traffic will dwindle and we'll lose our chance to talk people into buying from us. Customers are hard enough to come by as it is, right? So in truth, being vague about our target market will lose us the opportunity to attract the right kind of people, those who will love us for who we are. Now let's stop right there. That's a myth, right, Athena? Let's just clarify.
Okay, so you guys know, you're like, Athena, you weren't going to give a story, but then I've got to say something, right? Here's the thing. So in my coaching and when I do trainings, people, when I say, okay, who's your target market? And people say, anyone that will buy, or I've got to go wide so that I have more opportunity, right? That's the natural. I know Emily's shaking her head. She gets it too. That's the natural. When you're scared, you're like, I need more. That's the crazy thing, you guys. This is what we're trying to tell you. That is not true. Emily's going to give you a good story about that. But you guys, this is the truth. If you're listening to this, you're on your treadmill, on a walk, or at your desk, I know it's scary. I can't say that enough. I know it's really scary to think that you've got to narrow it down to go deep to get the fruit. And I know our brains say, no, I got to go wide because I'm starving. I get it. I hear you. I feel you. I've been there. But trust me, the narrower you get, the better the results. What other data we got?
Yeah. So I was going to say almost exactly what Athena just said. So Seth Godin, sorry if that's pronounced wrong, in his podcast riffs about choosing the smallest viable market. So beginning by picking an industry where you are welcome, the second half of this is getting out of the mindset that you need to please the maximum number of people, that you need the biggest possible market. The goal is to choose the smallest viable market, not the biggest one. And then Shane Parrish, he also goes into saying, the most powerful skill you've never been taught is focus. We all have the same number of hours in a week. The difference is how we use them. So saying no to mediocre opportunities is easy, right? Saying no to good opportunities is hard. The difference between average results and exceptional ones is what you avoid. You can do anything, but you can't do everything. So that wraps up our facts and figures today. So again, I will make sure that's in the show notes below, but we would love to spend the maximum amount of time with Emily today. So Athena, I'll kick it back to you to start off our interview.
Well, I am so excited, you guys. So I want to say this. That last quote by Shane Parrish, I want to tell you, followers, if you heard that and your gut went, oh, right? It's hard to say no to things that we think are going to be great. I get it. I just want to know if you're feeling those emotions, been there, you're not alone. So I want, as you are in a mind, I want you to be in a mind of openness to realize that maybe that your emotions and your fears are not correct. All right. So I know that I just want you to think that for a second so that you're open to hear what Emily has to say. And I'm so excited to get to share this story with you. So Emily, I am so excited. So you guys know, I met Emily a couple years ago.
Yes, I think so.
And had the privilege of getting to learn about her. And then recently, because of that interaction, I got to go a little bit deeper with her. And her story inspired me so much. I begged her. I was like, please come on, tell your story, because the world needs to hear about this because she's so brave in what she's done. And so I'm just going to get right into it. Explain, first of all, will you explain your business journey from before January of 2023?
Yeah.
And then tell me what happened in January 2023.
Yeah, of course. So without getting too long-winded into my background, so I always knew I wanted to be a graphic designer. I have a fine arts background. I knew that that was part of what I was going to do when I grew up. This is literally like going back to high school. I was pretty confident that that was what I was going to do. I ended up taking a brief detour because I was involved in the fine arts. I ended up working nonprofit for about a decade, which I was doing design at that time, but I also got really into curriculum development, fine arts programming, things of that nature, grant writing. So there was kind of this like other piece of education, nonprofit, whatever, that was going on while I was developing my skills as a graphic designer. So that was all happening as kind of the full-time day job, particularly after I finished undergrad. And then I, in undergrad, met my business partner. We kind of accidentally got assigned on a group project together. We were both a little nervous. She, because I was perpetually late to class, and she assumed that that equated to me being a slacker. Me, just because I didn't know. I was just kind of like, I don't know about that. I was used, even though I do have a problem with being late, but I was kind of used to being the person that carried group projects. So we both kind of came in a little apprehensive. By the end of the project, we were the only team that still liked each other, and more than that, created good work together. Okay. So we kept working together throughout undergrad. And then as we graduated, she took a full-time position at OU doing design. I took my job at the Firehouse Arts Center, where I was doing design, but also all of the nonprofit stuff. And we kept having these freelance opportunities, so we kept collaborating together. Mm-hmm. From that, Toast Design Studio was born. We're about to celebrate our 10th birthday. So I think it was, we actually freelanced together for about a year before we went official with Toast. And that was November 2014, I want to say.
Love it.
So we side hustled for 5 years. Before I went full-time. I went full-time first. It was a less scary leap because I was going from nonprofit salary, hours, and life and all of that to running my own business. Like, I was used to side hustle. I was working so many hours, was not getting paid a lot. And so for me, it was like, oh, well, this is an improvement. I'm going to be making more money and working less hours. I love it. For Tiffany, it was a little bit of convincing because she had a very cushy job at OU. So here, get rid of all your benefits. Also take a pay cut. Please come work full time with me. But I did kind of force her hand. I had my first son in April of 2021. And we made it through the pandemic together, actually. So I went full time in 2019, January of 2019-ish is when I went full time. We made it through the pandemic feeling pretty good about the business. We were in a good place where Tiffany was able to go full time in 2021. And things were going well. That had kind of been the job or the goal for the first 5 years, was making this our full-time job. We were really committed to a slow growth model. We saw a lot of other small studios that we would have considered our direct competition build and then flame out very quickly, because they grew too fast. They were reliant on like one or two clients. And then if those clients vanished, everything just collapsed. So we felt really good going into our full-time transition. But then after that,
we kind of were just coasting for a while. So we had recurring clients, we had, you know, certain services, whatever, that served us when we were growing our business, and we could be a little more flexible with who we were working with, what we were charging. We were charging less because we were part-timing it. So we knew that that was a benefit to a lot of the clients that we were attracting. And we got to a point basically at the beginning of, I'll say 2022 was probably our worst year, not necessarily financially, but just because we had drifted so far from our original goals and our alignment. We also hadn't taken the time to reassess, like, okay, we hit the big goal of going full time. What can we do now? Like, what is the next goal? What does the next 5 years look like? So it really took a year of, I wasn't creatively fulfilled anymore. We weren't making a ton of money for ourselves. We kind of started to pile on junior employees that didn't necessarily make sense for the business or serve us, but kind of, you know, for us, it was like, oh, well, the only way if we're successful is if we grow in that way. So we were taking on, you know, paying other people that didn't necessarily make sense for us. We had clients that didn't align with our values anymore, and we hadn't raised our prices in 5 years. So that's kind of what led to January 2023 and the conversations that ensued. Yeah.
I'm going to stop there for a second because
yeah.
I really hope the listeners heard in there.
Yeah.
First of all, 10 years in the making. Those of you who go into business are like, oh, this is going to be fun and easy. 10 yeah. years.
Yeah.
And there were so many words of wisdom that I want to make sure that the people heard. Is one, the longevity that you guys did it. The beauty of the partnership that you had, that art you showed that you could withstand a decade of working together, that's critical. And the assumption of we all face, right, as business owners, well, we must increase our staff or yep. therefore we're not a success, right? So there's a little nugget right there of truth if you're listening and you think the same thing. And that the business will take a life of its own, right, Emily? If you
absolutely
don't keep an eye on it. So all of those things she just shared with you, you guys, each one of those we could do an episode on. So just take those nuggets if you're doing business right now and think through that. But so that's where you got, you're a little boggled, right? The business
yes.
is taking its own. But what happened in 23?
So January 2023, we're wrapping up doing our P&Ls for the year before. We're taking stock of everything. Transparently, I'd interviewed for positions at very big companies during 2022, gotten very close to taking it. Thank God I didn't. I do kind of believe that like things happen for a reason. And so I think everything that was supposed to happen happened the way it should in 2022. But we kind of went into 2023 feeling like, okay, we could make more money at a day job elsewhere, not working for ourselves. For me, particularly the creative side of it, I wasn't proud of the work that I was putting out. I didn't think I was doing bad work, but I wasn't doing exceptional work either. We knew that things were needed to change a little bit. So we'd already started the process of raising our prices, and that had cut some of the clients that didn't align with our values anymore. It kind of naturally helped us trim some of that. It is very scary. I will say raising prices, I feel like when you talk to other people, that's the thing that scares them almost the most. You just got to do it. When you do that, the clients that stick around, that means that they are in alignment with your values. They do value what you're providing a lot more. And they're paying a little more. That will open the capacity, especially if you've been operating. Mm-hmm. You're not going, you can factor it out so that you're not losing that much money if a certain percentage drop. You should calculate that a certain percentage of clients will probably drop from your prices increasing. So we lost clients, but it opened a capacity for new clients. We were at this new rate, so we felt good pitching to people now that this is the rate that we charge. This is the value of what we're providing. So we had done a little bit of work going into 2023, but we basically had a come to Jesus moment of, okay, if we can't, you know, start working with clients that align with us, if we're not making the money that we want to this year, AKA more than what we would make doing other day jobs that we would enjoy just fine, right? And then if we weren't doing work that creatively we felt was where it needed to be, if we couldn't change all of that in 6 months, so we did give ourselves a hard deadline, That was it. And through that conversation, that created space for us to talk about, well, who do we really want to work with? Who is our dream client? And we do have a dream client that we work with right now that really we were like, okay, if all of our clients looked like them, what would it be? And it made it really clear to us that nonprofits and community-focused organizations were exactly where we should be. For us, that's particularly scary because I think there is this stigma of like nonprofits don't have money to spend, things like that, or that they're just kind of like flying by the seat of their pants. And I will say, just like any business that you work with, if you're working with a nonprofit that has just started and you have people that don't necessarily know what they're doing, just like if you're working with a for-profit business, they might not have the budget. They might not be able to trust you and kind of work with you where you're at because of where they're at. So in my mind, it really didn't feel any different than working with a for-profit business. And really, a lot of the nonprofits we work with, they have to answer to a lot more people. They have to have their budget set at the beginning of the year or beginning of their fiscal year. So it really did make sense. I will say, telling my husband, like, yeah, I think we're going to really niche down into nonprofits. He's an attorney. And he was just like, excuse me, what? Are you sure about that? I think he also felt like, well, there's not a lot of big nonprofits, that there might not be enough work. There absolutely is. There's a lot of people doing a lot of really good, impactful work. So that's really where it all started. And that's where the big pivot happened, was through those conversations and realizing that, like, okay, we could be getting the things that we need from our business elsewhere. So how do we make, like, what's the point of owning your own business if you're not making it work for you?
Hmm. Preach it. That's a mic drop moment right there, you guys. Mic drop, right? You've got to have passion about it too, right? It's not
exactly.
I think the people who think, oh, I'm just going to do it for the money. You guys, the money is not going to sustain you through the hardship that it is.
It is not worth it.
Emily and I are like, don't do it for that.
Yes, exactly.
The money takes a minute to get.
Yes.
So, okay. First of all, I want to tell you, thank you so much for your transparency and being authentic. I really value that in you. It's one of the things that even when I met you at the Treasury, you could just tell that's who you are. That's how you hold space. So I appreciate that because so many people are scared. And for the listeners right now, I hope you heard a couple of things. And one of them I want to unpack a little bit, Emily, is... Were you afraid? Because, right? You said you were. Can you go a little bit more into that for the people listening who have to make these raising prices, narrowing the market? Can you talk about your fear and how you overcame that?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say, and the thing that I think that my business partner, Tiffany, and I do a little bit differently, even from the beginning, like doing the slow growth model, we're not risk-taking people for the most part. Like, We were not going to go full time until we had our savings built up, which meant we were side hustling for those 5 years, barely paying ourselves from the projects we were taking through Toast. We were putting it all in savings so that when we did go full time, we had a safety net. So if things did go awry, if we grew a little too fast, took on too many employees too fast, we had a safety net and a cushion. And again, like, we're not the kind of company that can like get startup funding from somewhere. We didn't come from money. We didn't have investors or anything like that. That was money that literally, it was our blood, sweat, and tears, hours working after our day jobs, putting our significant others through it when we were working on stuff. We raised all of that money for ourselves. That's how we filled our savings account. I don't want anyone to walk away from this being like, oh, well, you just do it and it'll all work out. Like, it is a lot, in my mind, it is a lot of prep work to actually create the safety net. Mm-hmm. So that was the first piece of it. That makes it less scary. It's still scary, though, when your family is relying on your income to come in, right? So the other thing that we kind of knew is that we've done the hard part already. We've created the company. We've built these systems. Mm-hmm. Really, like, even, I guess, I don't know, I'm trying to decide if this is going to sound like too, this might be depressing for me, it's not, but for me, I'm like, I could go work at a gym somewhere. I could work at a coffee shop somewhere. Like, if I needed to make money in a pinch, I could find somewhere to make money and get hired quickly. Yeah. It might not be at the level that I'm at in terms of my skill set and my experience, but like, if things came down to it, I'm not like, nothing is beneath me to go and make money to sustain my family, right? Mm-hmm. So that also assuages some of the fears. So what's the worst that happens? I have to take a day job somewhere else. That's really the worst that happens, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing that kind of got us through it. And especially when we gave ourselves giving ourselves the timeline, I think helped with the fear mm-hmm. as well. Because if you're like, okay, we need to change these things, and you don't give yourself a deadline to it, you can just let stuff run itself and continue in the same cycle that you're in. So giving yourself a hard deadline, I think, is really important. Giving yourself a safety net, building that. And again, like, it might take time. A lot of people don't want to hear that. Just like you said, a lot of people want to become entrepreneurs and have success and think that their life is going to be like lunches and pedicures in the afternoon. And it's not like that in the beginning. It's honestly not like that now. This is honestly, if you go back to our operating agreement, it's so cute. There's like, we will have these days off. And it's like, no, being an entrepreneur means you will be working every holiday. So, being realistic, I think, helps. So deadlines, being realistic, building the safety nets for yourself, and knowing that, like, what's the worst that could happen? You take a job doing something you don't want for a little bit while you find the next gig, right?
I love that. No, so I appreciate your wisdom there. And I'm laughing because I'm agreeing. My laughter is yes. Anyway, if people didn't realize it, personally, if I didn't have the home building company that I built their sales system and I'm a partner in, if I didn't have that income, because every penny has gone back into the business.
Exactly.
Right? And people don't realize that. And so that's real stuff. And it means I have two full-time jobs. Jada does too. We have two businesses that we're responsible for. So, I wish we were going off having pedicures every day and getting to chill, but that's not the reality. But one of the things that we had talked about is you said once you defined your market, that your mental state, your creative state, and your financial state all improved. Can you talk about that? Because that's not where our brain goes, right? We think narrow all of those things, we're going to freak out, but that's not what happened with you, right?
Exactly. So getting more specific about our market, one, the creative thing for me was huge. So it also required a little bit of challenge. So not only getting specific about the market, but also knowing that there was a certain caliber that I wanted to be hitting. Mm-hmm. There were a few projects, particularly like February of 2023, when we were first getting into it, we'd set these goals, we were committed to it, that I'm also notoriously bad at estimating how many hours something is going to take me to do. It took me double the amount of time that I thought I was going to do. And previously, I'd been so concerned about making every dollar valuable and like really, I was more concerned with being efficient than making the coolest creative work that I could, right? Mm-hmm. So it was not only shifting that we're making more money now, so it is already inherently a little bit more profitable, and I do have a little more cushion because we had raised our prices in conjunction with this mm-hmm. shift. It also took making work that I was really proud of. And we had some clients that were really challenging me that had come to us. They were nonprofits that were like, hey, we really want this specific look. No one's been able to nail it so far. And so for me, it's like, okay, I will literally spend whatever time I have to nail it for these people. Now we have a great relationship and a recurring partnership. It has led to so much more business because I forced myself to do those hours early on. So creatively, some of it is just holding yourself accountable as well and not falling into those old patterns of like, okay, well, I know I'm making this much, and so my dollar per hour is going down, and thinking about it that way. It's some of it is you've just got to stay up and do the work. The more that you practice that and the more you do that, doing cool creative is a lot easier. So even some of those clients, some of those projects we had at this time last year that took me a lot of time to make cool stuff, it was a breeze this year. I'd gotten back into the habit of doing cool creative work, iterating a lot faster, challenging myself in different ways. I'd already shifted the way that my brain needed to think to create that work. by forcing myself last year. Again, the moral of all of this is that you have to work really hard in the beginning for it to pay off and go smoothly later on. So that really helped creatively. It also helps when you really believe in what your clients are doing. So I want stuff to look really cool for them. And I, because a lot of the time it means a certain dollar amount is going to come back to them. Working with nonprofits specifically, that's an impact. Literally the creative that I do, if it's not bringing in money for them, if it's not bringing in potential donors, fundraisers, et cetera, they can't do the cool work that they do. So thinking about it in terms of that impact and that result, what are you providing and why is it important? I think also helps with that as well.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And has it financially stabilized?
Yes. So getting clear with that as well. Honestly, I think we were just working with a lot of, because we were so broad and open-ended before, we worked with a lot of small businesses that even if we were excited for them because they were passionate about what they were doing, right? But they didn't have the budget for where we were at skill-wise. Again, not raising your prices in 5 years. It's very different working with someone that is side hustling, that's only 23 years old, just out of school. Like, you should get a discount to some extent. You wouldn't call it a discount, but like they're going to charge differently from someone who has been doing it for 10 years, has a lot of systems in place, has the work now to prove. And strategy, God, I cringe thinking about our early projects, how like strategy was kind of there, but there were no set processes. There was no way to actually quantify it or qualify the strategy that we were doing. So things increased partly because we're setting higher prices, but also that kind of meant that we were seeking people in our niche market that could afford to work with us, right? And if they couldn't, I will say for us too, we do a little bit of an exchange because we're working with nonprofits that if it's a fundraiser or something like that, we'll do a work swap where it's like, we're the creative sponsor, you pay this amount and we'll comp the rest as creative sponsor for the event, something like that. But yeah, really, profits went up because we were working with people that wanted to work with us. And because we had niched down, we were really able to show our expertise and say, hey, we've worked with 5 other nonprofits. Here were the exact results that we've done with them. Here's what the creative looked like for it. We can do all of this for you. So people want to invest with you more when you can show, oh, they can solve my problem exactly the way I need it to be solved.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, and since I'm part of some nonprofits, I've already been adding your name to my list. My Rolodex, if you will. I know that's old school, but in order to pull you out for a resource. All right. I so appreciate everything. I hope, audience, that you have heard all of these wisdom and all the nuggets in here. But as we close up the interview portion here, Emily, for those listening, my audience out here, that, you know, they're sales professionals, sales leaders, business owners, what's one piece of advice you want to leave with them?
Ooh, that's so true. Just one thing. I think my one piece of advice would be stay the course. If you have a vision, if you know what you want things to look like, who you want to work with, what you want your business to look like, commit to that. Work towards that. Understand that it will be work to make it happen, but commit to it and work towards it. Don't pivot if things don't go exactly the way you want right away. Like, give yourself some deadlines. Stay committed to the vision that you've set for yourself.
I love that. And by the way, I need to hear that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. Jada, so how can we connect with her?
Yeah, so I will make sure that her website is linked in the show notes below. But Emily, is there any other avenue that people can reach you or connect with you through?
Yeah, so all of the business stuff, it's at Toast Oklahoma pretty much everywhere. But then personally, if people want to connect with me, I'm pretty active on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn too, but I'm really active on Instagram. And my handle there is at mstrick and 2 underscores behind it. But if you put in mstrick, I will show up. So yeah, I love connecting with people on there as well. That is definitely the platform where I'm actually likely to respond to people and be checking on other people too. So, yeah.
I love it.
Phenomenal. Well, thank you, Emily. And yeah, we'll make sure to get that linked in the show notes below for anyone that wants to connect with you. Another way to stay connected with Athena and I is to join the Success Revolution. It is our weekly blog fueled by relationships, referral, and revenue, where we will send you weekly growth strategies for your business straight to your inbox. And then don't forget to like and subscribe to our podcast. This is the last one of the season. So thank you, Emily, for being here. And we will see you all next season. Bye for now.